has widened regionally involving Hezbollah on a limited scale in Yemen, while missiles from Syria have been fired at Israel sporadically. To make sense of it all, let me introduce our guests. Richard Metters, journalist and commentator, joins us from Vienna. Also joining us is Bill Doris, who's an anti-war activist organizer from New York. Welcome to you both. Richard Metters, let me start with you. And I'd like to start out with what Iran's leader has said. The people in Gaza, he said, have stirred the human conscience with their patience. And he said, even in Western countries, mentioning England and France and states across the U.S., he said, people have come out in huge numbers and they've chanted slogans against Israel and the U.S. government. And he said that their reputations have been ruined. How much of an impact have these countries that are so strong in their support for Israel suffered in their global standing, do you think?
Hi, thanks for having me on. I think the words of Iran's leader are very important because we have a problem here where people in England, people in the West are coming out in their hundreds of thousands and saying, we don't want war in Gaza. We want you to stop arming Israel. And the governments don't listen. They do not represent their people in any aspect. And you think this is normal because it is the West that created Israel and bankrolled Israel. But the problem is that the Arab countries are doing it too. Jordan only today, after almost a month of Israel bombing Gaza, only today finally recalled its ambassador. And even that is not enough. We have Latin American countries, Bolivia cut ties, Chile and Colombia recalled their ambassadors. These Latin American countries are doing more than some Arab countries. So I think that their global standing is suffering a lot, and their global standing of these Western countries is suffering equally. But if the Arab countries don't wake up, and I'm talking especially about the kingdoms in the Persian Gulf, if they don't wake up and do something, they are really going to suffer. And someone like Keir Starmer, who's the Labour leader in England, when it was Ukraine, he had no problem calling Putin a war criminal. Now when it comes to Netanyahu, he says it's not his place to decide who's a war criminal. I mean, this is hypocrisy and double standards. And, it's such a sad state of affairs that we can choose in England between Tories and Tories light. And the problem is they're all Zionists and they always have been. These people do not represent anyone in England. And the protests that are coming this Saturday and next Saturday are going to be even larger, and they will hit 1 million, if not more.
All right. Bill Doris, in terms of the activism in you, the Iran's leader has also... Okay. Well, Richard, let me ask you about another statement from Iran's leader, which kind of applies to how you say the Persian Gulf Arab countries can do more. And he has said that Muslim governments overall must block the export of oil and other essentials mm-hmm. to what he called the Zionist regime. They can obviously do that. And, this has the air and the feel of the BDS movement, in a sense, but on a much larger scale that requires, obviously, the realization and then the action of countries, regionally in terms of the oil, perhaps, yeah. and then internationally in terms of not buying goods made in Israel. Do you think that the will is there?
It is not there, unfortunately. And the thing is that we cannot just leave all of the responsibility shoulder the responsibility on people coming out in London. It is the Arab countries, especially those who have gas and oil, that should be shouldering the main responsibility, not only as Arabs, but also as Muslims. There needs to be solidarity. There needs to be respect for other human beings. There was a time when these Arab countries were one Arab country. And they do have a common tongue and a common history and a common religion and a common culture. But where is the respect for that? Egypt could close and shut the Suez Canal right now and stop this war. Saudi Arabia could shut down oil exports for just a week and stop this war right now. They are not doing this. To me, this is a gross betrayal, not just to fellow human beings, but to fellow Arabs and fellow Muslims. It is truly hurtful. And I can't imagine what people in Gaza feel. The desperation, just looking around and thinking, where are, our fellow Arabs and Muslims? Where are they? It's not coming from these Gulf kingdoms. The only ones that are really doing something are the axis of resistance. Yemen are firing ballistic missiles all the way from 1,500 kilometers, and they haven't even had time to rebuild the country. Syria is the same thing. Syria is barely standing because of this war for 10 years that's been waged by the West, and it's still trying to help. Iran Syria, they're under sanctions, they're still trying to help. And I think that is a very admirable thing, and it's an example for the rest of the region and the rest of the world to follow.
All right. I've picked one more statement by Iran's leader, which I'll come back to that later. I'd like to now reflect on what Iran's foreign minister has said today. He has warned against Israel's relentless onslaught, and he has said that both Tel Aviv and Washington will have to be prepared for a harsh response if the brutalities continue. This kind of reminds me of the way that Hamas came out time and again warning Israel when the Al-Aqsa Mosque desecration was taking place, when they did those incursions and they killed the Palestinians, when they detained the Palestinians. They kept issuing warning after warning after warning. Iran has issued a number of warnings now, and this one saying that, you better watch out because you have to prepare for a harsh response. Do you think that Israel needs to be ready for that?
Israel are not ready for anything. We saw how Hamas, which are not just under sanctions, they're under siege, which are basically the same thing, but it's even worse in Gaza. That look what they were able to do nevertheless. Hamas infrastructure is completely intact. The tunnels are intact. Their firepower, their strategy and tactics are intact. Israel have been trying every day secretly to get into Gaza, and they are failing on a daily basis, and that is why they haven't, quote-unquote, announced this ground invasion. Because they keep failing. They cannot get in. So can you imagine what Lebanon, what Hezbollah have prepared for the Israelis? What Syria and Iraq, the Hashd al-Shaabi, have prepared for the Israelis, never mind what Iran has prepared. Iran has had these missiles for 30 years that can already reach Tel Aviv. So, and Yemen also, as I said, that is already reaching the occupied Palestinian territories. I mean, yesterday the Israelis failed to shoot down one of those Yemeni missiles, and they didn't say where it landed, which gives us an indication of how embarrassing this is, that Yemen were able to hit them all the way from, 1,500 kilometers and cause casualties. The thing is that also Hezbollah are already involved in this war. They have stretched the Israeli forces thin, and they are pounding Israel's towers, their infrared sensors, their electronic surveillance and radar equipment. Every day they are blinding the Israelis in the north. So this is already putting pressure on them. And not to mention in Syria and Iraq, the Ain al-Assad base in Iraq is being hit regularly by the resistance. Conoco oil fields, Omar oil fields, Shaddadi, these are all being hit in Syria on a regular basis, 30 times already since October 7th. This is already a regional war. It's always been a regional war. And the Israelis and Americans are taking such a beating in Iraq and Syria and from Yemen and Lebanon that they don't even mention them, which I find very bizarre, because you would think they would call out Yemen. They just stay silent and keep the focus on Hamas, because of course everybody's looking at what they're doing to Gaza. And the Israelis are so embarrassed by what is happening to them on these other fronts, they won't even bring them up or mention them.
All right, Bill Doris joins us now, anti-war activist organizer from New York. Bill Doris, I need to address this question to you, which I asked my guests previously. That is and that's because of your, as an activist, I think that this applies to you to get your idea on, and that's the sanction that Iran's leader has asked the Muslim governments to do when it comes to the export of oil, and also other essentials to the Zionist regime, as he has called it. Now, this reminds me of the BDS movement, where it was activist-related or activism-related. Do you foresee this being something that's going to be set in motion? Do you foresee, or do you give it any hope of actually becoming a reality? And what can be done in order for this to spread, especially on a larger scale when it comes to governments, and perhaps applying that as a law?
What do you say is something the people of the world have to fight for? I mean, the United States, the war, the genocide against the Palestinian people, a country the size of the racist state of Israel would not be able to perpetuate this without the endless supply of dollars and arms from the United States. Israel does not make planes. Most of the bombs, missiles, they're all being made here and supplied for free to the Zionist regime, the genocidal regime. It's necessary for those countries who do say they stand in solidarity with Palestine to put their money where their mouth is. It's not even so much the oil as the money. The tremendous amount of investment and economic relations that exist that the Israeli regime has with many countries, including in the Arab and Muslim world. Chevron, which steals the natural gas from off the coast of occupied Palestine, also operates in Saudi Arabia. Citibank, which finances Israel's purchases, because Israel spends its arms money it gets from the United States so fast that it has to, Citibank finances the difference between what they spent already before the Congress can allocate some more. And they also operate in many countries. There was a time when, in the time of Gamal Abdel Nasser, there was a time when there was a boycott not only on Israeli products, but on corporations that did business with Israel. Countries should not. I remember after the Iranian Revolution in 1979, one of the first actions of the new of the Islamic Republic was to cancel arms sales because the Shah would buy so many arms from the United States. Why should countries be buying arms, planes, and so on from the very corporations that supply planes to the Israeli war machine?
All right.
Around the world, thanks. And we especially need to do it here because here is the real source of the problem.
The humanitarian aspect of this, when you think it can't get any worse, it does. Richard Medhurst, and I'm curious as to the way that Israel is being blamed for this. But we know that the U.S. is complicit also, not only in terms of the arms, assistance, but also in terms of the planning. But on a humanitarian level, I'm just trying to understand the U.S. thinking here. We're looking at the tons of bombs that have been dropped, which is being compared to Hiroshima, and in terms of the number of people that are being killed. Richard Medhurst, we also have this U.S. politician. Granted, he's maybe a bit on the extreme side, Lindsey Graham. But he has said in an interview that there's no limit to the number of civilians that is justifiable for Israel to kill in this war, which Israel claims to be on Hamas. Is this the type of thinking that is really prevalent when it comes to U.S. politicians, Richard Medhurst?
I mean, Lindsey Graham is a neoconservative ghoul. So, you know, I expect nothing less coming out of his mouth. He is, you know, he's more than happy to see everybody from Syria, from Palestine, from Iran dying just so he can get his way. And the corporations that my fellow guest mentioned can get their way because he is a PR agent for them. I mean, this thinking is really, really disgusting. And the New York Times reported that the Israelis, in meetings with their American counterparts, they told them that, you know, the West should shut up about what's happening in Gaza because during World War II, the United States dropped nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in August 1945. And then, you know, the Royal Air Force bombed Dresden, which some argue was even worse than Hiroshima. You know, I don't think that these are acceptable arguments because since then, it has been made very clear that these things were wrong. You know, there was no need to bomb Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was just a show of force for the Soviets. And you know, this hell that's unleashed on people in Dresden, you know, you can't just use those as arguments to butcher people in Gaza. People in Gaza are not Nazis, and they're not Imperial Japan. These are civilians. This is their land. They have not gone out and attacked anyone. They are being attacked. They are being besieged. They are being occupied since 75 years. So, you know, this argument is ridiculous. And I don't understand how the Americans, you know, it's one thing to listen to the Israelis, but it's another thing to say, okay, we'll keep supporting you. You know, Israel has wanted to drag America, to drag the United States into a regional war. For decades, they've been trying this stuff. And it looks like they might be getting their way, but I think they've bitten off more than they can chew because Israel does not have what it takes to even penetrate Gaza, never mind take on Hezbollah and take on Iran and the Hashd al-Shaabi in Syria and Yemen. This is lunacy. It's the resistance that has gotten stronger, not Israel. And so they have miscalculated very, very, very deeply and greatly. No matter how much they bomb people in Gaza, they're not moving anywhere. And we should remember that besides the corporations that finance you know, Israel's butchering of Gazans, Israel and the United States have been planning to build a canal on Gaza, the Ben-Gurion Canal, to rival the Suez Canal. They've been trying this since the 1960s to plan it, and they wanted to put nuclear bombs in the Negev Desert. This is a classified document from 1963. So we should remember that they have this economic incentive in mind, and they're openly telling Sisi, the Egyptian president, we'll pay you to take the Gazans. We will cancel and wipe your debt clean if you take the Gazans. Gazans are not going anywhere. Israel thinks that if they keep bombing it, they can frighten Gazans into leaving. That's not happening. And my fellow guest also correctly mentioned the gas that Chevron is stealing in the Mediterranean. This is so important because in the last 3 days, Israel has handed out 12 licenses to companies. How are they extracting gas if they're thought this is an existential threat for the Israelis, taking gas out of the Mediterranean? They've stolen the gas from Palestine, Lebanon, and Syria for a long, long time now. The Leviathan Basin is such a rich quantity of gas, you know, that it's just a dream come true. And Europe needs that gas because they sanctioned Iran and they sanctioned Russia and blew up Nord Stream. So Israel is trying to hurry up and deliver on its promises, but it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you agree, Bill Doris, with our guest there, that perhaps Israel is biting more than it could chew when it wants this to be a regional thing, pulling the U.S. into a war, most likely to have Iran one of its central, I guess, attractions for this war?
Well, what Lindsey Graham says, the Pentagon brass and the corporate ruling class behind them think. They support the eradication, the attempt of the Israeli racist regime to eradicate the people of Palestine. They have basically, Israel has long been part of a protection racket that the United States runs in that part of the world, an enforcer. Whereby countries pay tribute to the United States, and which Iran no longer does since the Shah was overthrown, and that's why Iran is a U.S. target, and they depend on that flow of wealth, and war is central to the position of the obsolescent position of Wall Street and the world economy, and like a gangster, what they have is their rep. They got to show they can kill and destroy, and people have to be afraid of them because they have nothing else to offer. But of course, all this endless supply of arms and money to Israel, which is really just a component of the U.S. war machine, is stolen from people here. It's stolen. They'd rather bomb people who are already homeless in Gaza and make them homeless again, than build housing for the hundreds of thousands of homeless in this city. There's 119,000 sure. children in the U.S. New York City school system. Mm-hmm. But military, we basically have a military regime in this country and a corporate ruling class behind it. They would do anything rather than spend money on okay. human need, any excuse. And Israel is an excuse.
And the U.S. wants to assist Israel militarily, as you have mentioned, to the degree that it is. But it doesn't want to come and promote a ceasefire. Of course, Israel also says that a ceasefire would mean that that means it's a defeat for us in front of Hamas. Now, I'm trying to understand the logic over here, where the root of the problem has to be the fact that occupation needs to be targeted, that the apartheid policy of Israel is the problem. Those are the types of things that need to be targeted. But yet the U.S. is going the military route. Why is it that the focus by the U.S. is not on those things, which is really at the source of the problem?
Because the U.S. Has nothing to offer the world. All they depend on is military force, is military power to maintain their position in the world economy, and that depends on destruction. That depends on destruction. They cannot allow a strong Africa, a strong Asia, a strong Arab world, a strong Muslim world, the entire economy depends right now on not just on the production of bombs and weapons of mass destruction and their use, but on suppressing economic development around the world.
All right, thank you for that, Bill Doris, anti-war activist, organizer from New York. And Richard Methurst, a pleasure, journalist and commentator from Vienna. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight from Mikhail Vitale and the entire team. It's goodbye.
This is Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. This is Asma. I have the honor to be your host once more. And here with me, I have Sister Bita and Brother Mustafa. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Good to be here.
Yeah, of course, the pleasure is all ours. And then, as the ritual of this program goes, please introduce yourself very briefly.
Sure. My name is Sayyid Mustafa, and I've lived in different parts of the world, but I'm originally from Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student here in Qom, and I'm studying psychology here in Hawza.
Yeah, that's great.
And it comes to me. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, our dear listeners, and my dear host and dear brother here. It's an honor for me to be here again at Back to Reality. I am Bita, and I'm studying at one of the Tehran University, and I'm studying medicine, by the way, and an honor for me to be here.
So wish both of you luck and success.
Thank you.
And
thank
happy
you
so for you to be here. So, for sure, the modern life has got too much of side effects, and one of them is depression, which has been a common word everywhere, I suppose. So, among your friends, among your relatives, in your close circles, even, you could see people who are suffering from depression, and sometimes you can't just give them any solution because you sympathize with them, because maybe somehow you are suffering the same problem as well, unconsciously.
Yeah.
So the word depression has got a lot of things to discuss about. There are different formats of depression. There are different forms of depression, and we have seen different kinds of them around us. So what is depression to you?
Actually, I think, unfortunately, these days I'm dealing with an amount of depression because I changed the place I live, and because of these geographical changes, I feel like I'm depressed and I cannot find a track of my life.
I guess you're homesick.
Being homesick is like you miss them. When you come back, you don't feel it again. But I feel it all the time. Mm-hmm. So the difference here is exactly that. And a depression for me is the time that you feel an imbalance in your life. There is something missing, but you cannot find what.
Yeah, that could be. And you, brother?
So
I'm sure there's a difference in the way men look at it and in the way women look at it.
I don't think so.
No, I think
what do you
so.
Mean?
Yes, I think so. Because maybe women would call a slight, simple issue a depression.
What you're saying is depending on the situation, men and women may deal with a different.
Yes.
That's probably definitely true, depending on the situation. For example, in the previous discussion, we talked about a mother. I think mothers are much better at dealing with children than maybe men, right?
Yeah.
In that situation, I would say I would get depressed with my son sometimes because, as I mentioned in the previous discussion, I didn't know how to deal with him.
Mm-hmm.
Once I learned how to deal with him, the depression went away, right?
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to say about depression is that depression has many different levels. There's like the normal level of depression that some of all of us feel.
Exactly.
But then there can be actual real depression, which can lead to suicide, for example. It can lead to illnesses.
Those are chronic depressions.
Yeah. And it can lead to, for example, you not being able to function in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when you should definitely seek expert help. Or any type of depression, I would say seek expert help, and that can help you out. And we can talk about that as well.
Yeah, but there are many people, they would go to experts, but then again, the problem is not solved.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, yes, I do agree that the therapy might be a kind of help, but then many times you cannot solve the complexes and traumas in people's souls and minds.
Now, let me tell you something. The therapy and going to experts and something like that is all about diagnosis. It's all about finding out what's wrong with you, okay?
Yes.
And the solution here is missed, unfortunately, because when you go through therapy and you talk to them, you feel like you know why you're depressed, but you don't know how to solve it. And this is why so many people go to experts and they don't get the result they want.
Yeah, that's very true. So this is just a cliffhanger. Let's go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio, You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I'm Asma, your host. And then Sister Bita and Brother Mustafa are in here helping us with the topic of depression, which is so common nowadays, I suppose. There are different forms of depression, and we have seen different forms of them around us. But then, what do you call a depression? I mean, what sort of things you see in a person, and then you say, okay, this is a sign of that person being in depression.
I think one big sign is lack of hope.
Yeah.
They don't have enough hope, or their worldview is negative many times. And that can be a sign of depression when they're looking at the world in a very negative, hopeless manner.
So most of philosophers were just depressed people.
Which philosophers are you talking about?
Even some psychologists and some biologists even,
yeah.
They seem to be suffering from depression and telling us some theories.
I don't know about that. You'd have to be very specific then. In general, I would say depression among people is because of these things. It's like a very negative view and lack of hope. They don't know what to do. They don't understand life. That could be one reason, by the way, definitely among many, many different reasons. And the way to sort of resolve lack of hope and negativity is to change your worldview. You have to change the way you're living, maybe. You have to change the way you're looking at the world. That would be my advice.
The biggest sign that I see in other people is the lack of satisfaction. Lack of satisfaction between what they want to be and what they are, okay?
Yeah.
And this is exactly the same about the philosophers. And our philosophers are the people who think about the things that they shouldn't think, okay? As you know, our brain...
I do not like this attack on philosophy.
Our brain is limited, and we cannot think about the eternity because you don't have any clue about these things.
And they want everything to be perfect. So the balance, again, is distorted.
And because of that, they are so depressed. I think this is the reason.
I don't know if I agree with that because I love philosophy and I'm not a depressed person.
Because you don't think about the things that you shouldn't. Like, we have so many verses and narrations in our religion that tell us that you shouldn't think about the nature of Allah Almighty.
Because the infinite.
Yeah, the infinite.
Sure, but...
Because you can understand
it. You shouldn't think about the nature of Allah, but you definitely should ponder about existence, right?
Yeah,
And that is the topic of philosophy.
I love philosophy, by the way, but I do think that many of them have got that dark point of view.
Possibly.
About life.
What I'm trying to get to is that it's our distance from reality, which sometimes causes depression, and we have to come back to reality, are on the show.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
And that's what maybe philosophy does. If you study it properly, it helps you identify reality much better so you can deal with reality in a better way. A lot of people are very distant from reality, and that's why they become depressed.
Yeah, and people have got different way of dealing with depression. Some of them would get themselves excluded from all the parties, from all the gatherings.
Yeah,
if she's a girl, then she's going to go and cut her hair. And then I don't know how boys would deal with
this
that.
This is me.
But then,
I cut my hair. Let me tell you why, because it's interesting. When I feel like I'm depressed, I feel like I'm losing control over the things that are happening in my life.
I start with my hair.
I cut my hair because I want to tell myself that you can control something. There is something that you can control, and this is your appearance.
This is one point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the reasons I do this is exactly that.
Okay. So one thing we discussed is to resolve depression is to bring control. Is that what you're saying,
exactly.
Right? And that's definitely true, I think, in terms of dealing with depression, is having control over your life and your decisions and your desires. And the way to do that is to plan out your life.
Yeah.
Is to plan and have goals. And I think that can help resolve some of people's depression.
Yeah. But I guess that's for before depression. After depression, the things are more complicated. And let's go for a break, and then after that we'll discuss the rest. So maybe one of the ways to deal with depression is to find refuge in different things. Some people would go to addiction. Some other people would go to some bad parties. They would go for bad companies. And then some other people would find refuge in the Holy Book of Quran and in Allah himself. They would get into seclusion and they would just exclude themselves from the real world.
Yeah.
So now the last one was a good form of dealing with depression, but the other ways need an expert to help them.
So there's bad ways to deal with depression, and then there's good ways to deal with it. The bad ways, unfortunately, actually make the depression worse.
Yeah.
Right? If you're going to end up, for example, doing drugs or going, you know, going into entertainment too hard, you're just going to see your symptoms of depression get worse over time, not get better. It will give you temporary relief for that time. But then once you're done with that activity, you're just going to feel maybe even worse or the same. The healthy ways of dealing with it will actually make you feel better. Although I do think that completely isolating yourself may not be the healthiest way to do it.
Exactly, because you are going to think more and more, and then thinking too much is
Even from a religious point of view, part of your worship is a social aspect to it. You must, for example, go to the mosque. You must, for example, do those things. So there's a social aspect to our relationship with God as well. It's not just being in isolation and praying to Him.
Yeah, that's very true. So, what about you, Rita?
As you mentioned, there are different methods to deal with this depression and so on. And I think the underlying reason of why people react to this depression in different ways is exactly the way they look at life. For example, I think there are three groups of people here. The first group is the group that they cannot tolerate the reality of life. Okay,
exactly.
They are facing the reality of life, the bitterness of life, and they cannot tolerate it. So they go for derealization of this reality, okay? They go for the drug, addiction, they go for things that will give them a kind of fake feeling of joy.
Yeah, it's an ecstasy, actually,
it
that
is.
Would give them this idea that, okay, you no longer belong to that reality
exactly.
in your life.
And there is another group here, the group that think a lot, that search a lot, you know, they're depressed. Why? Because they are feeling a kind of detachment to this reality of world, okay? And because of that, they want to face the reality of life and they feel like depressed. And they go for other ways of dealing with depression, like overdoing something, overdoing the communication with people, overdoing study, overdoing this and that. And the last group is the group that they feel the bitterness of life. They know it and they touch it and they accept it. Okay?
Yeah.
And then they strengthen the connection that they have with Allah Almighty.
You know, in literature, there are different schools of thought that I might call depressed people as well. One of them is the absurdist people. Well, they used to think that life has got this emptiness and meaninglessness in it. So, and most of them, by the way, were not religious people.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, if I look at it, there is a difference between a depressed person who has got a strong connection with their Lord, and the person who is depressed and does not have any religious bond and connection to heaven.
Yeah.
So there is a great difference between these two people. And I guess the first one, there's a great chance for them to find recovery sooner.
Right. I think you brought up a great point, and that's the connection to God. And we have the verse of the Quran which says, Allah bi zikrillahi tatma'innul qulub. That only the remembrance of God brings peace to the hearts.
You have to have somewhere to be refuge to, okay? And what is better than Allah Almighty? I think He is enough. And we have so many verses in Holy Quran that tell you that I am enough for you.
Exactly.
What are you looking for more than me?
Which is very nice. And yes, I do agree with you. Yeah. I usually say that when I'm in depression, the first thing that comes to my mind is the travel. Specifically when it's in autumn, then that would do a lot of help for you. But then, again, that a spiritual journey is another sort of traveling. So when you go into a soul-searching process, you would get to know yourself more and more. And then, just as the brother mentioned, you would get this connection to reality, and that reality would actually bring you closer to Allah. You would embrace everything as they are, and then you'd be satisfied with whatever you have. So I wish you all have a bright, peachy life and you would never get into depression. But unfortunately, that's inevitable in today's life. So try to find your own way of dealing with depression and trust in Allah. That's all. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, Laddi umarazaka.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي التي أما رايزك لا تعصي دليلتك وانسك.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
As the Israeli regime presses ahead with its atrocities, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank have held a general strike to express their condemnation. The shutdown brought busy life to a standstill, but protests and demonstrations were already organized all across the main cities. In one of those rallies, protesters marched to the headquarters of the United Nations in Ramallah, demanding an immediate stop to the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians in Gaza.
These non-stop massacres in Gaza and the latest committed against the Jabalia refugee camp are a failed attempt to weaken the Palestinian resistance and break people's steadfastness. Fighting is continuing, and the resistance groups are causing severe losses to the Israeli forces. And our people in the West Bank are also fighting the Israeli military measures and brutality.
We have the same occupation, and we are the same people. Geography does not, you know, divide people. We are just the same. We are all targets. Whenever you are a Palestinian, you are a terrorist, and you should be killed. People are killed for no reason and for nothing. So, you know, this is complete genocide. This is complete war crimes that should be stopped immediately, right now.
On the other hand, Israeli regime has escalated its military operations and incursions all over the occupied territories. Four Palestinians were killed on Wednesday. Three of them were martyred in Jenin during a military raid to the city and its refugee camp, and the fourth was killed in Tul Karim. The Israeli military has also used drones during this recent raid to Jenin. This assault has caused severe damage to a number of buildings and to the alleys. During the funeral procession of the martyrs, identified as fighters from Fatah's Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, mourners vowed to continue fighting and avenge the killing of Palestinians in Gaza and here in the West Bank. So far, 130 Palestinians have been killed by the Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank, and over 2,000 have been wounded. According to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, almost 1,800 Palestinians were detained during the daily raids. And for the third week, entrances to most Palestinian villages, towns, and cities have been blocked by military checkpoints, earth mounds, cement blocks, and iron gates, preventing movement between them amid an increased Israeli crackdown. Palestinians say the heavy crackdown is meant to prevent them from engaging in different forms of anti-Israel activities. With the escalation of Israel's aggression on Gaza, the regime's military has also been stepping up violence against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank. Despite that, Palestinians in the West Bank say they would not back up from supporting their brothers and sisters in the Gaza Strip. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Just 90 minutes before a highly anticipated march across Paris last weekend against Israel's war atrocities in Gaza, local authorities suddenly revoked the permit for the protest. That gave police legal justification to use a tool of political repression not seen since the Yellow Vests: massive fines. Out of perhaps 4,000 people, 1,400 protesters were given fines of 135 euros each. That's a total of nearly 200,000 euros extracted from the pockets of peaceful demonstrators, many of whom did not even know about the last-minute banning of the protest. Some of the fines may be dropped due to the controversial cancellation, but the initial figures were widely relayed by the media. The use of mass fines is the latest example of how France has effectively criminalized public support of Palestine and also silenced dissent against what is widely perceived as one-sided support for Tel Aviv, despite war crimes which have shocked the world.
Ne sont que un des éléments.
We must recall that this is just one element of the French government's absolute support for Israel. We saw Macron recently suggest that the West's anti-ISIL coalition actually be used against the people of Gaza. He also sought a nationwide ban on all pro-Palestinian marches, has constantly waved a false flag of anti-Semitism, tried to ban the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, and on and on.
Demonstrations against Israeli atrocities have effectively been banned nationwide since October 7th, with only two legal protests allowed thus far in the capital. Two protests are planned in Paris later this week, but many say it's difficult to trust that the government will consistently honor the rights to freedom of assembly and freedom of speech when it comes to Palestine. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The spokesperson for Yemen's armed forces has officially confirmed that Yemen has entered the war against Israel. In a televised TV address, General Yahya Sari stated that the Yemeni army launched a series of ballistic missiles and drones that targeted numerous locations in Israel.
Our armed forces launched a large batch of ballistic missiles and a large number of drones at various targets of the Israeli enemy. The Yemeni armed forces confirmed that this operation is the third operation in support of our oppressed brothers in Palestine, and confirmed that we will continue to carry out more qualitative strikes with missiles and drones until the Israeli aggression stops.
According to the military spokesperson, the United States, along with some Arab states, have allowed Palestinians in Gaza to suffer daily massacres and a strangling blockade. He condemned these Arab states for refusing to mobilize their armies in order to save Palestinians.
The Arab and Islamic world were supposed to mobilize and protect the children and women of Palestine. This is a moral, Islamic, and humanitarian obligation. In response to this, the Yemeni army had no choice but to answer the call of the Yemeni people and all free people. With our faith in Allah, Yemen's armed forces decided to act now in order to support the Palestinians who are experiencing this historic form of oppression.
The declaration of war leaves Yemen to become the first Arab nation to declare war on Israel since the 1967 war. The 6 days of war ended with Israel expanding its occupation over more Palestinian territories. Muslims and Arabs across the region are praising the Yemeni army's missile and drone attacks against Israel. The question now is, will other Arab nations take action to try and bring an end to the genocide in Gaza, or will they remain silent? Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Thousands gathered in the Pakistani capital Islamabad for a massive rally in support of Palestine.
all Islamic communities, including Shia and Sunni, came together to voice their strong condemnation of Israel's atrocities in Gaza. Pakistan's religio-political party Jamaat-e-Islami hosted Gaza Million March just a few miles away from the U.S. consulate in Islamabad to condemn Washington's role in supporting Israel's crimes.
Israel is brutally attacking the innocent people. Israel is brutally attacking with phosphorus bombs on the hospitals. And every day they kill 500, 600, even 1,000 children and kids and women and civilians. So there is no justification of such genocide.
Similar rallies were held in other cities where people voiced their anger on what they call the criminal silence of the world on Israeli bombardment in Gaza that has killed thousands of men, women, and children in recent weeks.
Children have nothing to do with war or with hate. This is implantation of hate within children as well, which is a very bad thing for people in the future. I would request all the leaders of the Muslim nations to rise. This is the time. We don't have enough time. We don't have any more time to rise and become united against all this, against the evil Israel.
The protesters demanded that legal proceedings be launched against Israel in the International Court of Justice for its ongoing crimes against humanity.
It's not a war. It's a proper genocide. It's a proper ethnic cleansing. And it is being followed by war crimes, proper war crimes, which is a crime not only according to Islam, but according to Geneva Convention, according to all the rules of the world. And, you know, this is not acceptable.
The protesters also called on the people of Pakistan to boycott pro-Israeli companies and make donations to the people of Palestine.
The continuous presence of Pakistani citizens at pro-Palestine rallies indicates their steadfast commitment to the Palestinian cause and their strong objection to the actions of the U.S. and its NATO allies who are supporting Israel's deadly strikes on Gaza. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Within Iranian parliament's constant diplomatic efforts, a delegation from the National Security Committee of the Iran's parliament met with the Syrian parliament speaker, the Ba'ath Party associate secretary, and Palestinian resistance factions.
Our meeting today was held in participation of representatives from Palestinian factions and a delegation from the National Security Committee in Iran's parliament. The latest field developments in the region, specifically in Gaza, were discussed.
The Iranian delegation confirmed that supporting Palestine is a profound strategic choice, and Iran will always support the resistance, emphasizing that Gaza is fighting for the nation and humanity.
We highly value the pivotal role of the Islamic Republic of Iran and affirm that our people, who are being slaughtered in Gaza, aspire to much greater action than what the Arab countries have undertaken, as they have been either incapable to act or complicit with the Zionist entity.
This message today conveys the firm solidarity of the Iranian people and the Islamic Republic of Iran with the Palestinian people's choices in resistance and the repulsion of the brutal aggression that targets schools and hospitals and kills children. Iran is practically rejecting Israeli aggression.
Mr. Hamoud Asabagh, Speaker of the Syrian Parliament, confirmed that Palestine will always be Syria's guiding principle and central cause. While the Palestinian faction leaders expressed gratitude for Iran and Syria for their crucial role in defeating Israel and reiterated their unwavering loyalty for the resistance front. The legislative Iranian delegation meets with the Palestinian resistance in Damascus, sending a message to the world that the besieged people in Gaza are not alone and they will have all necessary support to withstand and defeat the Israeli aggression. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
For the third Saturday in a row, pro-Palestine demonstrators packing the streets of central London to condemn the UK government's unequivocal support for Israel.
our government is cheering this on and it's supporting Israel to carry on with the massacre in Gaza. So we want to try and stop that.
I'm so ashamed of our government that they are sanctioning what I think is just collective murder. And it really, really has got to stop. It's awful.
They should be listening to the protesters and demanding that there's an immediate and complete ceasefire, that humanitarian aid is allowed through.
From Madrid to Milan and beyond, even in Germany, home to one of the largest Muslim communities in the EU, where such protests have been restricted over what was described as anti-Semitism concerns.
Despite government attempts to delegitimize it, support for Palestinians is on the rise, with hundreds of thousands of people taking to the streets of central London today to raise awareness of what's happening in Gaza and to express solidarity with the Palestinians.
Public pressure seems to be working. London's Labour mayor has become the latest politician to call for a ceasefire, breaking ranks with his party's leader, Keir Starmer, who said Israel reserved the right to cut all supplies to Gaza. 250 high-ranking lawyers have written an open letter to the government urging it to stop arming Israel.
And they are paying the taxes to kill our brothers, so it's unfair. It's completely unfair.
It should stop. We want ceasefire. We want talking, negotiating, but giving Palestine what it deserves, having been bullied for 50, 60, 70 years.
As the war on Gaza rages on, there is no sign of the emotions letting up or the demands that so many here are making for their leaders to find a political solution to the crisis. Saeed Porizza, London.
On Saturday, people from across Italy flooded into the streets of central Rome to stage a new rally against Israel's ongoing carnage in the Gaza Strip. More than 20 pro-Palestine demonstrations have been staged in several Italian cities and towns since the start of the conflict on October 7. At Saturday's rally, attended by more than 20,000 people, demonstrators were saying that what Israel has been doing for decades to the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip and the West Bank is shameful and outrageous.
It's a war crime. Israel is killing innocent people. It has occupied a land belonging to Palestine.
President Netanyahu.
Unfortunately, Netanyahu is not alone. That's why they are not stopping the war. How many more civilians and children have to be slaughtered?
This is a genocide, and it must be said. They have to stop now.
So far, the Italian government, supported by practically all the mainstream media, has lined up with no care for the onslaught of thousands of civilians and children by Israel.
The double standard on Israel and Palestine is appalling. American imperialism and Zionism deeply influenced the media's approach on the conflict.
The crowd of people at the rally held a march towards St. John's Square, waving hundreds of Palestinian flags and chanting out loud, "Free Palestine."
The United Nations has urged Israel to put an end to its collective punishment of the entire population of the Gaza Strip. A communication blackout caused by Israel's heavy bombing has resulted in the Gaza Strip being unreachable. This makes it even more difficult to obtain information and evidence about international law violations and war crimes being committed against Palestinian civilians.
It is important that the United Nations have condemned Israel's crimes. We are saying that Western countries, including the Italian government, are not credible anymore. They are complicit in the crimes perpetrated by the fascist Netanyahu government.
Many at the rally expressed deep concern over the fate of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians as the Israeli air and ground forces are stepping up operations in the Gaza Strip. Some said that, given the circumstances, the involvement of other countries seems inevitable. Max Civili, Rome.
Civili.
Hundreds of people have rallied near the Israeli embassy in downtown Seoul, demanding the Israeli military stop its attacks on Gaza residents and calling for a truce. After shedding more light on the ongoing deadly violence, including war crimes committed by Israel, a Palestinian student expressed her gratitude for the global popular support for Palestine.
Today, we affirm your solidarity with Palestine is solidarity with the truth, with the right people and the owners of the land, with those whom the world has forgotten for many years.
Speakers also warned of the pro-Israeli narrative dominating Western media. Meanwhile, many South Koreans are getting a grasp of the basic truths.
The fundamental problem of this violence lies in Israel's excessive blockade and repressive policy towards Gaza.
Concern among people from around the world has grown as communication with the Gaza Strip has been cut off and calls for a truce ignored by Israel and the U.S.
We need a ceasefire right now. Too many innocent people have died, and it is continuing, and no one is putting a stop to it. There's no one listening to us. No one is helping us. And I am for the people of Palestine. This is no longer a conflict. It is a genocide.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has called for a political solution and carefully sidestepped offering Israel the unconditional support it's received from Washington.
Although South Korea is an ally of the United States, what's striking is these regular demonstrations of support for Palestine. And while many of those rallying here today are students and business people from the Middle East, a broad range of participants are also Koreans who are increasingly questioning Israel's current actions, as well as Israel's overall policies toward the Palestinians. Frank Smith, Seoul.
On Saturday, more than 1 million people gathered in Atatürk Airport in Istanbul in support of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza. The rally was attended by Turkish president as well as a number of ministers and parliament members. Erdogan said the Western countries that shed crocodile tears over the death of civilians in Ukraine are not only turning a blind eye to the death of Palestinian civilians in Gaza, but also supporting it. He added that Turkey is against this double standard and hypocritical behavior. Turkish president also went on to say that the West has mobilized its politicians and media to legitimize the massacre of the innocent people of Gaza.
The main culprit behind the massacre unfolding in Gaza is the West. The massacre in Gaza is entirely the work of the West. Israel will not last even 3 days without the support of Western countries. They fully support the child killers in Gaza. Israel is now behaving like a war criminal.
Erdogan also warned that his country is preparing to reveal to the world that Israel is a war criminal.
We came here with our kids to stand with the people of Palestine, to voice our rejection to the killing of children. This is not a war. This is a genocide. Everyone knows and sees this, but they are unfortunately silent. I did not want to be silent. That's why I came here.
The rally-goers chanted slogans condemning Israeli atrocities in the Gaza Strip, calling it the genocide of this century. They called on their government to take concrete actions to end the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians.
At the concert today, of course, I canceled it. And I came here to voice my rejection to the Israel massacre against civilians and to support Palestinian people who have been witnessing a real massacre for the past 22 days. I hope that the voice of the 1 million who attended to this rally would reach the 3 billion Muslims all over the world, and we can push it to stop aggression.
The rally was attended by political party leaders, politicians, and artists. Protesters from different nationalities also attended to show their support for Gaza. They voiced their anger at the Israeli war on a blockaded strip that has no electricity, water, and even internet.
I am from Gaza and my whole family is there. I have lost contact with them since yesterday. For the past 22 days, Gaza has been under attack and civilians and children are dying. The international community is silent and all we need now is a ceasefire as even hospitals are being bombed and the situation is very bad in the strip.
Following Erdogan's speech, Israeli Foreign Minister Eli Cohen ordered Israeli diplomats in Turkey to return to Israel and called for a reassessment of ties with Turkey due to what he called harsh criticism by leaders in Turkey against the military offensive on Gaza.
Just like other cities around the world, people in Istanbul are calling for an end to the Israeli aggression on Gaza. People here want their government and the international community to help stop the Israeli genocide of Palestinians. Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me, proudly I would say,